Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and I recommend Jesus to thee. The more things change, the more they stay the same. So today we're receiving God's invitation to parents. But before we build our Bayith on the rock, now that they've eaten bread of anxious toil, let's carefully join together with our favorite co-host, Merritt and Barry. Hey. Good day, guys.
Good day. Well done.
Yeah.
Well, I love all your intros, but they always mean more to me
when they're your sermon. As Tim says, it proves that I paid attention.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what you took away from this message.
Got to build my Bayith on the rock. Oh, guys, what's new? What's going on? How are you?
It's springtime.
Yes.
Like officially.
Yay!
I agree.
Are you guys like spring, summer people or fall, winter people?
Spring, fall.
Summer, fall.
Spring, fall?
Summer, fall.
Summer, fall?
Summer, fall.
Summer's the worst, man.
Summer, fall.
Oh, summer's the best.
No, I like summer for like five of the days where it's nice and then it just gets like steamy and sweaty.
Yeah.
But spring and fall, that's it.
No,
that's what I'm all about. Your allergies are going haywire.
That's it. Spring allergies.
Nah, take some medicine. It's
winter cold.
Yeah, winter is the worst. Liv and I have discovered now this is what our fourth spring in the house. And we've now realized that there is an annual pattern that we go through the mental and emotional landscape of our marriage where basically by January, February, we're both like, what did we do? Why do we have this place? Why do we have these animals? You're having to wear coveralls to go out and feed the pigs at below freezing. Everything's muddy and dead. Yeah. And then all you can see are like all the unfinished projects. And we're like, what have we done this? And then never fails. April comes around and we're like, this is why. This is why. Because it's just like peaceful and paradise. The birds are chirping.
I just need to look at the birds.
That's all I got to do.
That's it. Yeah.
It's good. I had a moment, like little magical moments. Like yesterday, I was out doing some planting some stuff and mowing. And I just decided to come and sit on the outside of the outdoor chicken run. I just like sat on the ground, just like watch the chickens. Marge was dust bathing. It's a sight to behold. Anyway, so they were all dust bathing and hanging out. And then the phoenixes, you know, the new girls that came from the factory farm, one of them comes up right on the other side of the little gate and just like sits down next to me and then closes her eyes.
And the sheep will dwell with
the
lamb.
And then another one comes over and sits down next to her. And before I knew it, there were like four or five hens just napping around me. And Chester was just attacking the fence the whole time.
And but a they child were, playing among the ass pole.
That's right.
What?
Let's move on, I guess. She's quoting Isaiah 11, but doesn't make it right.
Okay. What spring projects do you have around the farm right now? What do you need to do?
So much stuff. Liv keeps reminding me, you know, you don't have to grow any of this. And I'm like, true. But
that is just what we do, son.
But I can't. That is what we do. Yeah, I can't not. I got to take it up next level. So. A lot of planting stuff and planting more
things.
So
right now stuff is going into the ground.
Yes.
But asparagus has already come out of the ground.
It has, yeah.
And you did get at least one morel mushroom.
One morel.
Bent as it were.
Yeah, we just found that out.
Yep, that worked out.
Is there anything else coming out of the ground in this season?
The wine cap mushrooms are popping. Those are great. They come out of, they just are in mulch. Like you just put them in the mulch and then they just mulch, wood mulch.
Are they delicious?
They're good. They're not like the best mushroom you've ever had, but they're like, it's like free mushrooms, like right off the ground.
Yeah.
And so,
stuff.
they're good enough and you could fry them up with some olive oil and they're great. And so that's coming out. And already my early glow strawberries are weeks away from being ready. Some of them. So
yeah.
I'm going to have a lot.
Big time.
Oh yeah. And my sour cherry tree is loaded. We're talking hundreds and hundreds this year, which I can't believe.
What do you do with sour cherries? Yeah.
I eat them right off the tree. They're so good.
They're sour?
Not that sour. Just think like they're just like cherries from the store. They're just not like super, super sweet. They're more, they've got more tang.
Okay. A little
tart.
They're good.
They're really good to me. So
like that's when I get really excited about your farm. The animals, they're fine.
Forget the animals.
They're fine.
Yeah.
But when you start like bringing buckets of produce from your yard, Barry's the best. Yeah.
I just transplanted two of my elderberry plants. I just split two of my elderberry plants so I can have four and just go to town on elderberries. Yeah, it's great. Apples are popping. I might even have a pawpaw for the first time this year. I'm just very excited.
I don't even know what a pawpaw is.
Have a pawpaw and do not bring me a taste of said pawpaw. I don't know if I'll ever speak to you again.
The only time I've ever heard of Pawpaw is in Jungle Book.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah, he sings about the prickly pear and the pawpaw.
Well,
yeah. And the big pawpaw. No, I need to try this.
Me too. I've never had one. I've only been growing one for like 5 years. But
what is it? What?
They're like a, I don't, they're like a, think like a papaya meets a banana, but like in North America.
Think of mango, but pudding.
Pudding?
Yeah. Like it's kind of like this squish.
Is why, but this is why nobody has it, because you can't, they don't keep well. And so like grocery stores would be out of money trying to sell them, mm-hmm. because putting them on the shelf, they'd go bad right away. But if you eat them right off the tree, they're delicious. Apparently.
Oh.
Again, I've never had one before. So we'll see.
All right.
They have to cross pollinate, and yes. I have one tree that has like 150 flowers on it, and the other tree had one. And we'll just see if that one flower did its job.
They have
we'll
to cross pollinate.
Yep.
There you go.
That's what you always say.
My son, who has invaded my yard with native species, he planted pawpaw trees, I believe, and I think persimmons.
Ooh.
Something or other. But he has told us this is no guarantee. Because the seed that he put in the ground, he doesn't know.
He went by seeds. Yeah, that's a roll of the dice.
He keeps going by seeds.
It's cheaper.
Yeah, it's cheaper and it takes way longer. But anyway, they have to cross-pollinate.
Yeah,
so we might maybe someday be able to grow fruit we can eat.
You can have a plum.
Someday.
Or a persimmon. Anyway, what's up with you guys?
Yeah, what's new with you, Maren?
Oh, what is new with me? Guys, I don't know. I don't know. When I preach, I go underground for days.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I didn't see you last
just
week.
Just came up for air this morning, so that's what's new with me.
Have we talked about your sabbatical on the pod?
Not really. We've alluded to you not being here.
Surely that's got to be coming up in your mind, right?
Like only as of this morning.
Really?
I'm telling you, like I really am like one hurdle. Okay. Defeated that hurdle, next hurdle, or the next event, or whatever. And it's been Easter, 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 Easter. Okay, I'm preaching at the end of April, preaching at the end of April. Uh-huh. And now that is done, now
sprint
and only now
line.
Can I think about the sabbatical that is coming up in June.
So tell everybody, when are you going to be gone?
June. The sabbatical starts for me June 2nd, which is grad weekend. I want to be around for that.
Yeah.
June 2nd will be my last Sunday around Grace. And then I'll take 3 months, a gift from our elder board. Every staff person gets a sabbatical of some kind after 7 years on staff. And it is my turn. It's my turn.
What are you going to do? Have
June, July, August. I was just talking to somebody about that. I was looking at my calendar this morning, and sadly, I have like an event almost every week of the month, all of the months. There are some weeks that have less events than others, but like something like a doctor's appointment, like midweek.
That is not an event.
No, it is. It's an event.
only Maren would be like, guys, I can go to a doctor's appointment anytime I want.
Yeah.
No, like it ties me to the area. That's what I'm saying. So I kept looking for like...
Those can be rescheduled. All right. Anyway.
I need help. I kept looking for like 3 weeks at a time that I could go see my sisters or my friend in Chicago is delivering her third child. And I promised her I would watch her two little ones while she goes into the hospital and has her third child. So there's things like that where like, I don't know if she'll be a week early or if she'll be a week late. So then I can't really plan anything around her due date until I know how that all played out. It just stuff like that. So I've got some events I'm doing some worship thing for your dad in Gatlinburg with my son, Jaden.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Doing that. Doing another worship thing with V-Voice, the Venezuelan super group from Grace Church and elsewhere. They're doing a thing in Wisconsin my son asked me. My son drums for them occasionally. And so he texted me the other day and he's like, hey, Enrique wants to know if you can come to Wisconsin, you know, because I'm playing drums with them. And I was like, oh, I get to hang out with you in Wisconsin? Sweet. That's awesome. Like mother, son, road trip. What could be better?
Blessed is your mother.
Amen. Jose Felix told me yesterday morning that he was so excited to hear that I was singing with V-Voice in Wisconsin.
He got signed up.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing, I guess, which will be so fun and I will love it. But
going on tour.
There's a lot of like little music things that are happening.
Okay. So that's all happening over sabbatical.
That's right.
That's my right. wife is under the impression that you're just going to be baking bread with her.
On all of my off days. Whenever I'm not doing music, I'm baking bread. That is the plan.
That's the plan?
That's the plan. Because she'll still be at work, right?
Yeah, I'll be here.
So yeah, whenever I'm not doing music, I will be baking bread with your wife.
All right. Guys, we have at my house, I need a little bit of help.
Okay.
Two things. One, we have raccoons.
Oh, no. In your roof or in your
Why are you ending that with a question mark?
Are they ripping the siding off your house?
No, they're not in the house, but I've seen a lot of raccoon droppings in our yard.
Oh, sure. Those are toxic and you've got littles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a bunch of like brush in the backyard and I'm pretty sure that's where they are.
Okay.
But the other night, my wife almost called the cops because...
One of them was knocking at the door.
Because of the banditos?
Yeah, one was using their tiny paws and just trying to like pry our trash can open. And it sounded like somebody was banging on the house.
Uh-huh.
So I went out there and realized I'm terrified of animals
Is your rabies shot up to
date? No, so I went out there and I look over at the trash can and there's just a raccoon just like staring me dead in the eyes with his little like black shark eyes. And
Mapache.
And so I grab a broom. Uh-huh. Actually, I take one of the bikes and I just like roll it. I just roll it as hard as I can at the trash can, which the raccoon is sitting on top of. And I take a bike and I roll it at the trash can and it hits it. But the raccoon just like stays there and just like keeps looking at me. And so I grab a broom and I just go. And it was not phased at all.
I can't imagine why.
So I started like poking the trash can with the broom and it like slowly climbed down and like slowly sauntered across our yard. And my wife had 911 pulled up because she didn't know what was going on. She just heard.
Because the thing could have been rabid and it could have gone for your face.
But
she heard 911 pulled up.
Yeah. She just heard me like throwing the bike into the trash can and going. So she thought something bad was happening. But so ever since then, I've found the raccoon droppings and I'm pretty sure they're like in our yard. How do I get rid of them?
They're definitely in your yard. You need to get rid of that brush.
Oh,
do you have a burn barrel?
No.
You can borrow ours. I will bring,
bring your burn barrel over at sabbatical.
Yeah. That's what I will do.
So I need help removing raccoons. The other thing I need help with is we're trying to like alternate who of our children gets to do an activity. So like Milo just got done with basketball.
Yeah.
Last summer we weren't doing the show, but I would have shared. Lane was in soccer and stood like a statue in the middle of the soccer field for the entire season. He didn't want to play. He just stood there. And so the whole game was happening around him and wasn't really interested until the very end. But it's Lane's turn now because Milo just got done with basketball. And so Lane was like, I want to do karate. So we're like, all right, let's go do karate.
Okay.
So last week, Lauren took Lane to his first karate.
Oh, wow.
What is
that
it?
Really,
match?
I don't know.
Practice? I don't know. Karate thing. And
to watch or to participate?
To participate.
Yeah.
And they ended up sitting there watching because Lane got out there and started crying. It was like, I don't want to do this. And so Lane is just like not interested in activities and I need help. How do you get your kid to do what he says he wants to do? Like he said he wanted to play soccer. He said he wanted to do karate. And then we get there and he's like, no, I don't want to do
any
of this.
Well, he did end up participating at the end of the soccer season because you enticed him with something, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to go over to his bench where he was sitting. And I said, Lane, I will give you anything you want if you just go in the game and try to kick the ball. You don't even have to kick the ball. I just need to see you move your leg toward the ball. I will give you anything you want. What do you want? And he said, I want some watermelon gum. And I said, you already have that. But that if that's what you want, that's fine. Is there anything else you want? And he goes, I want to be on another planet.
Watermelon gum it is.
And that's pretty dramatic, over dramatic. But
that's what he needs, theater. You need to put that kid in theater.
I was just going to say, it sounds to me like Lane is not shaping up to be interested in sort of all the run-of-the-mill things.
Yeah.
Maybe he's going to be into like...
He's the artist.
Like... Or science experiments at home or...
Yeah, we got to find something because it's not like we're trying to entice him with karate.
Right,
he was
right.
Like, I want to do karate.
Yeah.
And we get there and he doesn't want to do karate.
Sure.
And Lauren comes from a long line of people who are like, we're not quitting. You said you wanted to do this, and so you're doing karate.
So you're getting, wait,
but that's
you
a
get
punishment for me.
Yeah, right.
Because I have to go sit there and watch him watch karate.
But if you had like some watermelon gum during karate and you just kind of held it up like, hey, man.
Dangle it in front of
him. Yeah, you participate. This is yours on the drive home. Like, would that work?
I tried that in soccer with like milkshakes. I was like, if you go out there and kick, we can get a milkshake on the way home. And it didn't work.
Okay. But that's because you weren't dangling the milkshake in front of his face.
That's true. Maybe that'll work.
I have sorry, go ahead.
No, just he's out on karate, so we're not doing that. And I don't really know how to get him interested in doing something.
That's so funny. I have a vivid memory that just struck me of probably being closer to Milo's age. What is he? What's he in school? Is he in
Milo's six? He's in kindergarten.
Kindergarten. Yeah. I might have been first or second grade, but I went to karate. It was like an after school thing. And so my mom and dad let me sign up for it because I was interested. I don't know who from, whether it was from them. We were all very in a very different headspace about like evangelicalism and church and stuff. Yeah. But I just remember there was a little bit of a concern that I would be taught some Eastern religions.
Yeah, watch
in
out.
Karate.
Watch
so
out.
I remember going mentally prepared to think about like Noah's Ark or something. Oh. I vividly remember thinking that's goodness. What I'll think about. If we have to start meditating, I'm going to start thinking about Noah's Ark. Anyway, I've come a long way. But anyway.
If I have to say yes, Sensei, I'm going to say yes, Lord.
Oh, that's right. That's so funny.
Anyway, vivid memories.
Think about Noah's Ark.
That was my solution. I was prepared. You know, got to prepare your heart.
Oh, speaking of prepare your heart, I don't know if there's anything that could have prepared me for a parent sermon. This
Holy
past
cow. Marin.
We are in week two of our sermon series, All in the Family. And Marin, you gave the message and it was an invitation to parents and masterclass. It was great.
It was such a great message,
it was
Marin.
Hardly a masterclass.
Masterclass in like.
It was like back to basics, I think.
I just mean, we'll talk about this in a second. I just meant like, you start with a children's song.
Oh, yeah.
You end with a children's song, a different children's song.
Well, yeah, sort of, yeah.
You have
a child
singing
a song. Yeah,
you have the motif of the building with the, and you kept coming back
like
to that. It was like
wonderfully written.
Thank you.
You tell the story of your sister and then you end with that video. And I mean, I defy anybody who had a dry eye at the end of that.
Thanks,
it was insane.
Guys.
It was so good. And knowing. Look, even just looking around during your message and knowing the stories of so many people that it was so relevant and applied to them. It, just like you had said, like the idea of a parent, it's such a broad topic, but man, it was phenomenal. So well done.
Thank you guys.
Really great.
So week two. And what was kind of the big idea you wanted everybody to walk away with?
Well, the big idea was the more things change, the more they stay the same. Mm. As I was digging into this, what is God's invitation to the parents? That's kind of what I kept coming back to, more of like, what are the things that all parents have had in common since the dawn of time? And, as I found that, that survey that, surveyed the top five problems millennial parents say they face, I was just so struck at the similarities between pretty much every generation that has come before. Every parent has had the experience of feeling stressed overall, or stressed about finances, or stressed about striking a just the right family balance, all of the things. And so it really did feel like, wow, there's nothing new under the sun, even though things are vastly different from what they were even 10 years ago. And there are elements to what we face today as parents, like the digital age, that wouldn't necessarily have been directly experienced by some generations that came before. The emotions tied to those things were definitely experienced by the generations that came before. The worry I have about my kids, raising them in the digital age, that worry was felt by the generations that came before. So what is God's message to parents? It's the same as it's always been. He is the firm foundation, and we as family builders would be remiss to try to build our families without God at the very center. The scripture passage came from you, Barry, in your sermon series overview. You typed up a couple of sentences on where you thought the sermon should go,
Could go
in light of the series overall.
Yeah.
And you're like, Psalm 127, because it talks about how children are an inheritance from the Lord. Children are a reward from the Lord. And
building the house.
Building the house. Unless the Lord builds the house, those that labor, labor in vain. And so that was the big idea. It really just kind of came out of the scripture itself. Mm-hmm. If the Lord is building the house, great. And if he's not, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
So how... You said that you had a dream.
A fever dream.
A fever dream. You usually go through, like when you prepare, you talk about when you prepare for sermons, that, you know, you spend weeks thinking about it and whatever. But I remember you saying you kind of changed course.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that and what happened.
Okay. Yes. So we try to hammer out as many details in advance as we can for the sake of the production team and for other, for the worship team, for the other teams that kind of have to help support the service itself. Musicians need to know what songs they're practicing, and they need to do that in advance of actually when the sermon notes are due. Mm-hmm. So some of these elements that we pick, like songs and things that follow the message, sometimes those things are chosen and in place before the message itself is even completed. Most of the time, that's kind of how it goes. But your sermon series overview helps us to really know the direction that the sermon will go in. And so it usually works pretty well.
Yeah.
And so in this case, with this particular message, Tim Hayward and I, Tim is our associate pastor of worship. We worked together on finding an appropriate song that could potentially follow a message based on Psalm 127, unless the Lord builds the house, those that labor, labor in vain. And so I found this song.
New King James.
I found this song. Give it up for the ESV this week. Coming in clutch. Yeah. Coming in
surprise
clutch.
Surprise appearance.
I found this song called If the Lord Builds the House. Mm. And I'm like, oh, perfect. And we just put that in there. If the Lord builds the house, nobody can tear it down. It would have worked. It would have worked.
Mm-hmm.
It would have worked. It would have been fine. It would have worked. But there was a Friday night. I think it was. So the sermon notes are due on Wednesday. The Friday ahead of that, I had a fever. I talked about it briefly on the podcast last week. I got sick for the first time in ages. I got real, real sick. And I woke up at 4:30 in the morning, like I said in my message, with my nephew singing that little song in my head. And when I woke up and tried to fall back asleep and tried to fall back asleep and couldn't because his voice just kept ringing in my head, I started to think, okay, this is more than a fever dream. I should pray about this. And maybe the Holy Spirit is prompting me to either change how I write the end of the message or change the song that comes out of the message. And I took a day. I took a whole day to just sit with this idea and make sure that I wasn't being impulsive or, you know, again, questioning, Lord, is this really coming from you? It would have meant, and it did mean, a last minute change for the musicians in the band who'd already been practicing the other song that I picked. And I didn't want to bum them out. Like, hey guys, psych.
Sorry for all that work.
Psych. It's actually, we're going with a different song and it's 7 minutes long. But in the end, that's exactly what I ended up doing. Because I really did feel strongly that it wasn't just a fever dream, that God gave me that dream of my nephew because he was giving me direction on how he wanted this message to conclude.
So at that point, were you like, I got to call my sister and
get
her permission? Like, do you ask her, can I share your story? Or was it kind of a surprise? Like, did she know that you use that as an illustration?
Because it was my nephew and it was that video and all of that revolves around my sister and her story. Once I realized I wanted to go in that direction, I knew I would need a conversation with my sister, both just to do the nice thing and let her know I'm even considering sharing her story. That, again, that video that she shared that I used in service is something that she had made public. So I know that she's comfortable with talking about things like this and with putting your child's face on screen and all of that stuff. I already knew she was comfortable with that. But really, I wanted to have a conversation with her about what I had said in the message. I really am in awe of my sister and the way she's building her house. I would easily describe her as one of the best parents, if not the best parent that I know. Both my sisters, actually, they're remarkable in the way that they're raising their families. And so I just wanted to have a conversation with her, and really also with her husband. They were both in the car together when I called my sister. And so it really was this kind of group conversation with my sister's husband, Eric, and my sister herself, Felicia, just about what got them through that storm. And I say through the storm, even though I know, like, my sister will always walk with a limp. My sister still celebrates that first infant that she had lost to a stillbirth. She still celebrates that child's life every year. She marks the day of his birth by kind of paying it forward. She goes to a local grocery store and she buys a birthday cake for whoever bought a birthday cake that day, like, or mm-hmm. ordered one. She just pays for it.
That's cool.
Every year on Isaiah's birthday. So I know that this is not something that she's not just over it in a flippant sense. No. It's something that she lives with ongoing. But as she lives with this, she really has learned and discovered, like, the secret to having joy in all situations, which is just so biblical. And she's living it out in front of me. And so I just wanted to pick her brain about that and ask her for some wisdom.
Yeah. So you went through kind of some challenges, or the five biggest challenges millennial parents say they face as parents today. But as we talked about, also pointed out that there may be new twists to some of the challenges, but largely parents of every generation face similar challenges. Mm-hmm. I saw, and as you were going through each one, I saw rows of heads just, like, nodding, especially when you got to, like, the digital age.
Oh my goodness.
So, raising kids in a digital landscape came up, and it reminded me of some of the messages actually from January,
right,
when mm-hmm. we did virtual reality. Because a lot of that was, the Bible says nothing about virtual reality or, like, digital age, but some of the principles of human nature are the same as they always have been. So, when did it come to you to, like, balance the biblical truths of the Bible with, like, some of the modern challenges? Like, how did that connect for you?
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember, like, when in the process that survey kind of came into play. I think in order to talk about a problem, you have to, like, identify the problem or at least agree what we're talking about. You know, if I say, oh, there's a problem with today's parents and they're so stressed out, like, well, what am I really talking about? I felt like I needed to put a finer point on it. Unless the Lord builds the house, what's on the other side of it? What's in vain? Okay. Wasted time. Sure. All right. But, like, why? I guess what's the bottom line, mm-hmm. you know? So anyway, maybe that's when it came into play, but finding that survey, I guess maybe initially I didn't know if that was yet another rabbit trail or if it was something I would actually use. There were quite a few rabbit trails that did not get used when this thing finally got put together. But again, being able to find a survey like that identified so simply the top five things in a survey of 1,000 parents, which, you know, can represent what most of us are probably feeling mm-hmm. as millennial parents. And then again, seeing how similar it was to generations previous. I think about that sometimes. I think about when I always have to be very careful because now I have adults, not children, and one of them watches the show religiously. But the other one,
she's tuned out.
Kind of radical, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that she feels like she invented this radical thing. Uh-huh. And I'm like, child, please. Like,
been here for years.
For years. And before you, it was me, the punk rocker. And before it was me, the punk rocker, it was the hippie from the 60s. And mm-hmm. before it was them, it was someone else. Like, there's just, there are these things that are just so common to the human experience. I'll give you an example. We were talking last night because kids these days are doing this thing. Both my son and his girlfriend and my daughter and her boyfriend, they kind of like swap t-shirts, you know, like, cause it's common for, you know, a girl these days to wear an oversized t-shirt or something, or my son to wear a fitted t-shirt, whatever. So they're just sharing clothes. It's a thing. It is a thing. Yeah. Where'd you get that jacket? Oh, it's Maddie's. Where'd you get that, you know, whatever, like jacket, sweatshirt, hoodie, you name it.
Right.
This is what they're doing.
Take your word for it.
This is what they're doing. Oh, it's my boyfriend's hoodie. He just let me wear it. You
I
know,
get that
whatever.
Part. I've never heard of it going the other way.
Okay, well, like- before that, it was scrunchies. Guys were walking around. I see a head nod in the room from our producer. Guys were walking around with scrunchies on their wrist, or girls were walking around with scrunchies, hair scrunchies on their wrist.
Yeah.
And it kind of identified that you
this
were like
taken.
With someone.
Uh-huh. What?
It's like, yes, this was not even a decade ago.
Oh,
like
my.
This was a couple of years back.
It's
but
like
before
eating
that,
Tide Pods area.
Wasn't it like, like you
Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Before that, it would have been like, wearing their bracelet or wearing their ring. Yeah. Oh, I'm wearing his graduation ring or whatever. Yeah. What I'm saying is there's...
You go back far enough and they're wearing the letter jacket of the boyfriend.
The Letterman jacket. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Just, there's always something.
So the new version of the Letterman jacket thing is the hoodie. Like, I'm just wearing my boyfriend's hoodie or whatever. So anyway, these things that to my kids might seem like it's unique to their experience of... Mm-hmm. teen life or young adult life is actually not that unique because we've been doing it for generations. It just looked slightly different in the generations before.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I've been reading a lot about ancient Rome. Do you know what the young,
speaking of Letterman jacket,
you know what the young adults did back in like first century
no,
BC?
No, but I bet you do.
The trend was that they had their togas belted loosely. And everyone was like, oh, kids these days.
You know,
one prominent loose belter was Julius Caesar himself.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Before saggy jeans, there was the loose tunic.
Yeah. And you know where that led him? Dictator for life.
That's
the
it.
Fall of the Roman Republic.
Et tu, Brute.
Just saying.
My goodness.
Sorry. I couldn't help it. I was just thinking about that.
Anyway, I think that is something that I kind of ruminate on frequently. It's just like, what are the things that we have in common?
Yeah.
It might be a fear of a new subculture. Mm-hmm. And again, that has happened throughout history again and again and again. Oh, these hippies, they're going to be the downfall of society. You name it. There's always a new subculture on the horizon for parents to fear or for people to fear or to blame for the downfall of society. So I think about these things a lot, which is what led to that list of the top five things that millennial parents say that they face as challenges, and our challenges are true, but was also true for the generations that came before.
Yeah. What do you think? So if the point is to build a spiritual foundation or build your family or your house on the rock, what do you think are like guideposts that that's actually happening? Because one of the things is guilt, right? Mm-hmm. And fear. One of my fears is like, I'm not doing enough to do what we're talking about. So how do I know I'm even doing it? Like, what are the signs that is actually happening in a house or in a home?
Off the top of my head, I think one sign that it's happening is that when troubles come or there's chaos or there's sickness or something, your first reaction is to turn to the Lord and not to try to just fix it. Like when that becomes your first reaction, it means that it's a learned practice. It's something that's becoming part of your rhythm. So if that's happening, that's an indication. But I also think you could see it in the kids. There's like the fruit of the Spirit. There's the fruit of Spirit-led parenting where you can see the kids that are, it's not just behavior, but like kids that are courteous, kids that have a compassion for others. Like some kids are just wired that way, but so often you can tell that this child is being taught how important it is to respect others, to treat others with dignity. And like, that's the kind of thing that not many children can just generate on their own. It's going to be something that's learned. So yeah, I don't know. Those,
because I started worrying about this when right around the time Milo was asked, Milo, do you even believe in God? And Milo's response was, I believe in myself. And I was like, maybe we're not doing enough.
Okay, but recently Milo has said other things, right? About like,
yeah,
the snake, or like, you've told us other stories where little Bible stories are starting to like leak out of Milo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The most recent, so he goes to a Christian school.
Right.
The most recent, we're on the way to school and he's like, Dad, I think I want you to know I made an important decision. What? And we're like pulling into the parking lot of on the way to school. And he's like, I accepted Jesus into my heart. I'm like, oh, well, buddy, do you want to talk about this a little bit more? Like, why are you sharing? Like, can we talk about this tonight? And he's like, no, I need to talk about it right now. And I'm like, well, we're in the car line to drop off. Like, is there, can we talk about this tonight? Maybe when we get home, you and me and mom can talk about it. He's like, well, if I accept Jesus into my heart, I get to play the xylophone over the microphone at school. So I need to talk about this right now.
Please tell me that's not an actual like reward.
They have a very strict rule about xylophone usage. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so really funny.
He just wants to play a xylophone over the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, let me remind you, you're playing the long game.
Yeah.
And in the answer to your question, maybe right now there's less, you know, fruit evident or things like that. But over time, I think, what does the Bible say? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Over time, they do start saying things. Things will come out of their little hearts, out of their little mouths that you know you planted by the word. Things that are true, things that are eternal. I have my own versions of the stories that you tell. My daughter very famously, as a, I think she was around 3 years old, I was trying to pray for her as she was going to bed, and she looked at me with straight defiance and said, I don't like the Lord of Jesus. And it was a terrifying moment.
Yeah, that's when you start questioning, am I doing enough?
That's when you start questioning divine election, all kinds of things. Yeah. Like, no, Lord, no.
Yeah.
Not my daughter, no.
Yeah.
But then over time, you know, she is, she's exhibiting fruit of the Spirit herself. She is, like you said, she's being kind to others. She's discerning right from wrong. She's having conversations with me about things in life that are bothering her because she sees them as unjust. And then we tie them to biblical justice. And that's why you see it that way. And that's why you feel it that way, because you represent God in this world. You're part of his kingdom and all that stuff. Like the conversations that we had over time, even up to last night, my daughter's boyfriend came to church for the first time yesterday.
Oh.
And it was so awesome, of course, that he came to church and to see him there. But the bigger thing for me is when I'm sitting in the front row, you know, getting ready to step up to the podium and speak, and I glance over at my daughter, and it's like she'd been waiting for me to make eye contact with her.
Oh.
And she has this grin on her face, and she just waves at me. And she was so happy.
Sure.
To be in church with her boyfriend, happy that he came. Like the look of joy and happiness on her face was just huge.
Did he go to the welcome party?
Enormous. He did not go to the welcome party, nor did he go to the thrift store. I was upset about that. They should have gone
to
the thrift store.
Make a good impression.
but no, like my daughter went from, I don't like the Lord of Jesus to being somebody who's like
happy that her boyfriend's at church.
Happy that her boyfriend's at church and smiling at her mom from across the room. Like, you are playing the long game.
Yeah.
You're playing the long game. And I've got young adults, and I know that I'm still playing the long game. I am under no false notion that my kids will not have some sort of massive deconstruction, you know, in the next 10 years or so. And that'll be something that we will have to love them through and walk through and pray them through. I don't think we've made it. Mm-hmm. I think even the parents like myself who have adults as children, you're still playing the long game until the Lord calls me home. I will be playing the long game with these children I've brought into the world.
Yeah. So I, as I mentioned, I personally struggle with dad guilt and actually my wife was listening to the sermon. She wasn't in service yesterday, but she listened to it last night. Mm. And when you got to the part where it's like, one of the things millennials struggle with is guilt. Mm-hmm. And she was like, did Maren talk to you about this? Like, are you her source for,
for millennial guilt?
Yeah. Dad guilt.
And no, for the record, yeah, Maren,
I was like, I don't think so.
He is not my source. No.
But I am on sad dad TikTok. Like, I see all the videos of like, when they're making you mad, just imagine yourself 70 years from now. And all you'll want is the this very moment. So I see tons of videos like that. And I'm just like, I'm not doing enough.
Fascinating. Cause I've seen not one of those. Yeah. Like again, uh-huh. The algorithm is targeting you in ways that it is not targeting me. I have never seen a sad dad TikTok.
So how do we help parents not feel guilty? Like, is that part of our job or is that, like in terms of the church, how should the church help alleviate? Is it our job to help alleviate guilt or fear or stress or whatever, all of these challenges? Like how do we participate in healthy parenting that way?
Well, I think we started by, I mean, Maren mentioning it and like just acknowledging this is something that everybody struggles with. Like, I think that's a good starting point. But I also think like just acknowledging the fact that we're all broken people and reminding people of the fact that we're all broken people, that's just should help at least. But I think most of all, what you did, Maren, by not so much, I actually love the fact that there wasn't a list of a bunch of practical facts at the end, because what you were doing is you're saying, look, the main thing is the main thing, building your home, building your family on the solid rock of Christ. Like, sure, it's easy to get guilty and be like, oh, I could be doing that more. It's like, but it's just, it's focusing you back on the center of like, this is the direction that I want to be moving. Mm-hmm. And this may help alleviate some guilt, but the question is, are we at least moving in that direction? Yeah. Maybe we're not making as much progress as we'd like, but is that where we're pointed as a family? Because if you are, then don't necessarily beat yourself up so much. You're moving towards Christ as the center.
That's good. Because you get caught up in, at least I do, I get caught up in the day-to-day, oh, you're having a bad day, or I'm having a bad day, or, you know, parents themselves are like depressed and anxious and doubtful, and they have questions about spirituality, and so we're all at different phases of our faith journey, and I sometimes feel like I'm doing a disservice to my family and to the children when I am the one sometimes like struggling with some of these things. You know what I mean?
I have a scripture that I thought of when you were asking this question. Ecclesiastes 4, this is the New King James Version, so let's see how this reads. 4:9. Okay. 9-11, I think. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. That's how I answer this question. I have mom friends who are very open about their mom guilt, and we sit over coffee or play dates or whatever, and we have discussions about the emotions we feel tied to our parenting, good and bad.
Yeah.
And it's like having someone to pull you out of a pit. If she's feeling guilty and I'm like, oh, honey, you don't have to feel guilty about that. That's something that is common to all of us. It's human experience. And this too shall pass. All of that stuff. Yeah. Then good for my friend, because she has somebody who can help lift her up when she's down. But woe to you if you are trying to do your parenting in a vacuum and you don't have a community of support and people around you, especially people, like I said in the message, who are themselves referring to God's building plan, studying his principles, i.e. the Bible. If you don't have a community like that, then I don't know how you break free from the guilt.
Yeah, right.
But if you do have a community like that, that's what should be helping to alleviate this crippling guilt. I think we'll all have guilt over something. Like, I look at my kids and there are moments I wish I could take back. There are things that I said, moments I lost my temper, and I wish I could take them back. but it's not crippling.
Yeah.
You know, because I know that there is grace and a path forward.
Yeah.
But this, I have a community that helps me when I do feel that crippling guilt.
Right. And this is also why it's so important for intergenerational community, because you have the older people who can speak into you and say, it totally happens. It's okay. Or it will be okay. That kind of stuff is like invaluable. It's why it's so much better than just everybody being only connected with people their own age.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I am really seeking out at this stage in my life, moms who have parented their children through adulthood successfully. Help me. How did you do this? Yeah. And I know that I'm the mom voice to some of my other friends, even friends who are my age, who have kids that are your kid's age.
Yeah.
Friends like you.
Yeah. Need your help. Okay. So I couldn't help but wonder, I have a number of friends who either came to faith later in life, who now have grown children, and they themselves came to faith later in life. So the children are no longer in their home and their influence is different. Or I have people who have grown children who have walked away from their faith or whatever. And their version of guilt is, I thought I was building my house on a firm foundation, and now I have broken relationships with my kids, or now I have kids who don't believe in God, or maybe I myself don't believe in God. Like, but I thought I was doing that. Like, what do we have to say to people that are, cause I, it's like direct application to me. Cause I have a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old and a baby. It's like, all right, I got nothing but time ahead of me to like,
right,
build the foundation. But right, what do we say to the people who, maybe the answer is the long game, you know, maybe that's part of the answer, but what do we say to the people who feel like that they tried their best to do that, yet the results are not what they would have hoped for or wanted in their relationships with their kids or their family or whatever?
That's something that's one of the reasons why I found this particular message to be so challenging, because I knew I was not speaking to just one subset of people, i.e. you with your littles, and you're just now building the foundation for them. Yeah. I knew, again, the word parent is so broad. And I was talking to a lot of different people in a lot of different, across a broad spectrum of life experience and where they are. I knew that I would be talking to parents who say, well, I did that, but my child walked away from the faith, or they're not. I shared a story not that long ago in another sermon I did about my brother. He was an example of that.
Yeah.
My parents would have said, look, we had a firm foundation. Marin's a pastor. Mm-hmm. Her two little sisters are both worship pastors. And then we got this other son over here who's, you know, strung out and making all kinds of bad decisions in life. But he was built up on the same foundation as the other three. He was our prodigal. He was our prodigal. And they never stopped praying. My mother never stopped praying. His father never stopped praying. And our story ends with a happy ending. That same prodigal brother is now a Sunday school teacher. Mm. And I would always joke with him, like, it's going to catch up to you. You know, you can try to outrun, but you know, it's going to catch up to you. Our story ended with, well, not ended. He's obviously, you know, he's still on a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right now he's following the Lord and he is building his house on a firm foundation, much to our surprise, because we couldn't see that coming for a while there in his life. But anyway, I knew that I would be talking to people in all kinds of different life circumstances. And that's one of the reasons I included the story about my sister wailing over the loss of her child. Because right now there are parents that are wailing over their prodigal. Mm-hmm. But even in their dark tunnel, they don't have to wait for the light at the end of the tunnel. They don't have to wait until their prodigal finally comes home and then they'll be happy. Even for them, I believe that there is joy on the journey.
Yeah.
And that they can find strength, not just joy in you know, the way that we would mean happiness, but joy in the way that we would mean strength. It's hard to be in a position of waiting. It's hard to be in a position of not knowing how the outcome will be. Everybody hopes to see their child come to faith before they get called home, you know, this side of heaven. They want to see their child not just come to faith, but like be established firmly on the rock.
Yeah.
Not struggle with certain addictions and things like that. And they want wholeness. They want happiness. They want health for their child. And so in the waiting, I see them, much like my sister in that rocking chair, crying out to God, wailing to God, but taking this burden to God, and he is meeting them right where they are in their waiting. And like my parents, never stopped praying for that child who had been raised on a foundation but walked away. And then again, I knew I would be talking to parents who would feel guilty about, well, I wasn't a Christian until my, you know, latter years or whatever, and I didn't raise my kids, and now I wish I could go back and do it over again. Well, it's never too late to pray for your kids. It's never too late to start praying for your kids. It's never too late to talk to your kids about the life change that you yourself experienced. Why did you come to Christ later in life? What was it about your encounter with Jesus or with faith that made you change, that made you repent or do an about face from the way that you were living before to the way that you're living now? Maybe there's something in your story that they don't know. Maybe there's something in your story that they need to hear. And then maybe that will be the thing that piques their interest or pricks their heart or whatever, and gets them to consider the way that they're living their own life.
Yeah.
I would just say two quick just realities. If I was speaking to a parent that was feeling that, number one, is just the reminder that your children are moral free agents. Like you cannot control the behavior of another. Mm. You can only influence. And so it is not necessarily a reflection on you as a failure of a parent or any of that, just because things don't work out the way that you expect, because your children are not robots. They are moral free agents. Mm-hmm. And they have their own journeys and their own stories. And so that you just have to remember that.
Yeah.
The other thing though, that I think is helpful, and Maren, this is a lot of what your sermon was about, is the fact that ultimately, as much as we wish we had complete control over the fate and lives of our children, like they are in God's hands, and they are his gifts to you. They mm-hmm. are his, like the arrows in the quiver, right?
Yeah.
It is God's gift to you to have these children. He entrusts them to you.
Yeah.
So you have a responsibility, but at the end of the day, they're his, and he loves them more than you do.
Yeah.
Which is probably hard to believe, but that's the case. So there's that reality that they are their own people. They can make their own decisions, and there's that confidence that ultimately they are in God's hands. And there's that trust that comes from that and says, like, I'm going to have to just trust that you know what you're doing because this seems to be getting out of my control.
Yeah. I love that you talked about not waiting for the light at the end of the tunnel, but the light of the world is in the tunnel with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible to find joy in the middle of the storm. I think that's critical. Because for me personally, it's easy to focus on the storm, like swirling. It's easy to focus on the whirlwind, like, especially like with young kids, it's like, man, I just want to get through the day, like get to sleep or whatever, like get them to sleep. And it's easy to be swept away in the storms and focus on the storms themselves. But how might we zoom out? Because I think that's what it is. It's like, you're zooming out to be like, let's look at where God has brought us from, or let's zoom out to not focus on the storm itself, but focus on like, where is the light in the tunnel? Like how do we encourage people to do that in ways that are most effective?
I think God will, well, he's light. So he illuminates things, right? I don't think I can be prescriptive in like, here's how you find joy when your kids are making so much noise and you can't even hear yourself think and things are so chaotic. I think all I can say is in those times, lean into God. Even in the middle of the chaos, you don't have to shut yourself in a bathroom and try to have a quiet time. Like even in the middle of the chaos, you can go to a quiet place in your mind and just ask God to help you see where the joy is.
Yeah.
And I do believe that he will show up and reveal that to you. And it could look any number of ways. I can't tell you what that's going to look like for you. I'm thinking right now about a time not long ago, I was hiking through Mounds State Park, but it was like the dead of winter. Actually, winter had just kind of set in. Winter had just set in because it was a little bit warmer above, like, you know how Mounds kind of goes down like into a ravine or riverbed or something like that. And so up on land where we parked the car, things were quite dead. But the further down we went into the ravine and the closer we got to the river, the more greenery we saw. There was moss and things like that on rocks where up by where we parked the car, there was just dead trees and dead grass and no moss. The closer we got to the water source, the deeper we went, the more things looked like they were at least alive and pretty and beautiful. And this was right around the time my mom died. So I was in my own storm. And I remember the Holy Spirit speaking to my heart saying, you're going to have to work a little harder to find beauty, but it's there. It's going to look very bleak all around you. Things are dark. Things are gray. And it's going to be that way for a season. You're going to have to go deeper. And I promise you that you will see beauty and you will find life. It's there. It's just not on the surface right now. You're going to have to go deeper. And that lesson has never left me.
Yeah.
I feel like for parents, for anybody who finds themselves in a stressful, less than ideal season in life, the beauty is there. You just might have to look harder for it. But he will reveal it to you. Just ask him.
Yeah, that's good. What I like about this series specifically is kind of what you said, Maren, and you said it the week before, Barry, that it may be an invitation to parents, but there's something all of us can hear today.
Right.
And Barry, you're not a parent yet. So
unless you count all the pigs. Yeah. No, I'm not.
So how have you, like, how have you viewed, cause you love kids. You have a nephew, niece,
nieces.
Mm-hmm. You're great with our kids. You're great with all kinds of kids. How have you viewed your responsibility or your role in other people's lives who are parents while not being one yourself? Like I'm curious how you, or what you heard, as a non-parent.
Sure. Wow. Good question. Well, I guess in general, I'll share back before I got married. I want to be a dad someday if that's what God desires for me. But I also am not like, it doesn't have to happen because I had this moment of, I was tying marriage and having kids kind of in my mind and was getting to a point where, I mean, I was in my early 30s and or maybe late 20s. And I was thinking, okay, well, I haven't found her yet. So I guess maybe I'm going to end up being single forever. And so I kind of was coming to grips with that. And one of the things I heard from God is this invitation to be a father to many. Mm. And this was way before being like a pastor. I just felt this invitation to being a father to many. And what that meant to me was you can be a loving influence in the lives of lots of kids. And you could be Uncle Barry to a lot of kids. And so that just kind of gave me some freedom to explore, all right, what does that look like? And it's been the case. I mean, I now am literally Uncle Barry to some kids, but I'm also Unc B is what Piper calls me. Unc B, Unc B. Anyway, it's very cute. But yeah, I think I see my role as I want to be a safe place for kids. I want them to feel like you probably notice I don't do this like necessarily on purpose, but I always kind of get down to their level when when they come up to me. I want to give full attention to their stories. I want to like go along with them with their imagination. And it's all just a matter of like, I want them to feel dignity and feel like I matter. That's probably why kids like me a lot. Cause like they do matter to me. And to me, like as they get older, I am excited about the possibility of continuing to be an influence to them, but not just in like, hey, you matter, but also like, hey, there are some other things that matter in life too, like caring for other people and look how compassionate I am with my animals. And hey, look at this. And hey, let me baptize you. I've now baptized two of the kids that basically grew up in my arms as small group kids now. And it's so, I don't know. It's that I can be part of that community that, you know, nobody should ever try to parent on an island. So I get to be a part of that community that helps to build into and feed into that that construction project of the homes built on the rock. So I can carry some lumber, carry a hammer. I'll do my bit, even though it's the parents who really have the lion's share of the work. So
that's cool.
I wanted to talk more about that concept in this message. There just was not time.
Of course.
It was already a long message. I'm sorry. But I wanted to talk more about that because I have father figures in my life who are, well, for one, I was born without a biological father. He had died before I was born. So I came into this world without a father. So every father figure that I have known in my life has been somebody who stepped into my life to be that, to take on that role in the absence of my biological father. I have so many wonderful, wonderful, godly men in my life who I literally refer to as dad.
Yeah.
I called, actually one of them called me while I was preparing this message and he was upset because I hadn't called him in a while and he talks to me like a dad and I call him dad and I love him as one. But I know that he's not just that to me. I know he's that to quite a few people, That's just something that he's kind of uniquely called to. But then thinking along those lines, I found a letter that, a high schooler had written to my husband and I probably a decade ago or more, maybe more than that. Oh, more than a decade ago for sure. When he was going off to college and he just wanted to write a thank you letter to my husband and I. And in this letter, he refers to us as his second parents. And this kid has great parents.
Right.
This kid did not need, you know, other parents to stand in because his parents were failing. He has a good home, two wonderful parents. And yet he spent most of his time hanging out with us, watching sports at our apartment.
Yeah.
I was making them food and we had all kinds of just conversations about everything. We were just doing life together, just doing life together. And when he was a rebellious teenager and off doing things he shouldn't have done, one time he drunk texted me on accident. And it was awful. Don't do that,
children. Throw him under the bus.
Don't do that, children. I didn't say his name. And he doesn't go here. And you don't know who he is. But it was one of those moments where it's like, you know, we love our little prodigal. We love him. His parents were so glad that they had some reinforcements because their kid was kind of going off the rails. And me and Jed were the reinforcements. And anyway, at the end of all of that, he sends us this beautiful letter that I've held on to all these years where he thanks us for being that in his life. And then he says things like, I want to have a family like you guys do someday.
That's cool.
And just so beautiful. So beautiful. I think whether you are a biological parent of another child or not, I said a little bit about it. I feel like we all have responsibilities within the family of God to be fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and children to each other. That's what community is. We've so lost this idea of the village.
Yeah.
Right? It takes a village to raise a child. And I think we all would agree with that on some level. But in our hyper-individualistic society and in our single family homes, we've just completely lost this notion of what it means to be the village to one another.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to preach about that. It should be second nature to us. It should be a no-brainer, but because of our culture and the time that we live in, unfortunately, it's something that we have to keep reminding people. I shouldn't have to convince someone who is not themselves biologically a parent to someone else. I shouldn't have to convince them of the role that they play and the importance that they play in the life of another. That's just a given.
Yeah.
I have two people on my prayer team who came and prayed for me in person ahead of the 9:15 service. Neither of them are biologically themselves mothers. But both of them are looked at as mother figures within this church body. That's the role that they play as mentors. And so I had them in mind as I was writing a message to parents. What does this say to either of those women? And again, I just want to thank them and remind them that like my self-appointed godfather, who I called dad, they take on the role of mother for so many in our church community, and they are very much seen as parental figures.
That's cool. Where do we go after this? What are we doing?
We are going to talk about elders. Tim is going to come and speak about those who are elders, not necessarily grandparents, but that's probably going to be true for many, but those who are the older generation in our church, and what role do they play in the spiritual family and in the lives of those around us. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. He'll be here next week, I hope.
Sure.
So, yeah. What one thing I love, and Barry already said it, one thing I loved about this and about the weekend prior is it's not preachers and speakers saying, I'm the perfect parent, take it from me, here's what we need to do, you know, or I'm the perfect husband, here's what we need to do. It's like we're speaking on behalf of God's invitation to do something new, or to do take actions that maybe we can all learn from and grow from. So yeah. I really appreciated that that this past weekend, because yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm anywhere close to a perfect parent, but there's definitely things that were new in your message for me to take and abide by, and brought my wife to tears. And so, you know,
have you taught your children to pour their own milk yet?
Well, I'm actually proud of you for that illustration, for the one where you stood before hundreds of people and declared that you didn't know how to use Netflix.
That's right.
That's a lot of humility.
I have not taught my kids how to pour milk, because they could have that much milk and it's spilled.
You're not there yet, but you will get there. Sleep is coming. Yeah.
So thank you for the message. This past weekend, I think I've really grown to appreciate both the weeks in the sermon series. And so I'm excited to hear what Tim and Amy have to say as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So we talked about it this past weekend. If you want to dive, if you're a parent yourself of kids of any age and you want to dive deeper into hearing discussion or more application from members of staff and volunteers at Grace Church, we're hosting a parent roundtable on May 5th during both service times at 9:15 and 11 o'clock. And you can register for that on our website at gracechurch.us/parents. But I know that that would be a benefit for people of children of any age or parents of children of any age. So do that. Parent roundtable. So, all right. I think that's it. And we'll see you guys next week. Maren, will you please send us out?
Yep. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.